Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Wagons West by Russell J. Atwater, narrated by Scott Miller.
Chapter 1. Kiowas. Bruce Cowan lifted his bowler hat and mopped the sweat from his forehead with his bandana. In Boston, the hat had served him well, but the Kansas sun bore down on him like a furnace's breath. Bruce's long nose, which stuck out farther than the brim, already felt sunburn. He glanced over at his bareheaded son, Wes. Bruce figured his son's bushy blonde hair offered about as much protection as his bowler hat. No one had told the stout Bostonian he would need a wide-brim hat at the general store in Kansas City when he had bought supplies for the Santa Fe Trail. They hadn't told him a lot of things, like how sore he'd get riding a horse for 6 hours, and that the recent rain would leave the trail so muddy the wagon would get stuck almost every half mile. When that happened, Bruce tied his and Wes's horses to the wagon and pulled it out of the mud. Bruce missed Boston. He had made a decent living for his family as a brick mason. Everything had been fine until Matthias Carruthers, the brutal leader of the shipyard gang, had spotted Becky, his 18-year-old daughter. Lois had been ailing and sent Becky to take Bruce his lunch, which he had forgotten in his rush to be on time for work. Unfortunately, Bruce had been working at Matthias's house, laying bricks for an addition. Carruthers, a middle-aged gorilla of a man with acne scars, had taken one look at golden-haired, green-eyed Becky and declared he wanted to marry her, then and there. To say no to Matthias Carruthers was a death warrant. He had killed men for looking cross at him. Both Lois and Becky had been horrified at the notion of her marrying the ugly gangster. Bruce had sat down with them at the kitchen table and explained that if they stayed in Boston, Becky would have to marry Matthias. Out of that conversation had grown the situation the family found themselves in now, on the Santa Fe Trail, less than a day out of Kansas City.
"Pa, what are you thinking? Your face is all pinched up like it gets when you're trying to figure something out," Wes said.
He patted his spotted pony on its shoulders. Of the four members of the family, Wes had taken to the adventure with a young boy's enthusiasm. Becky still brooded over having left her friends behind in Boston, and his wife, Lois, lamented having to sell their house at a dirt-cheap price. Luckily, Bruce had managed to put off Carruthers long enough for them to find a buyer.
"I'm thinking about Boston, Wes."
Bruce glanced at the two wagons ahead of him. The one directly in front carried his wife, Becky, and the family's possessions and their trail supplies. The oxen-pulled wagon ahead of the Cowans belonged to Jitter Block, his wife Nettie, and their infant girl. A milk cow walked behind the wagon for the sole purpose of providing milk for the baby. The two families had met at the general store. When they realized both were heading out on the Santa Fe Trail, they had hurriedly decided to travel together. Since Jitter was from Kansas, Bruce had hoped he would be a wellspring of knowledge on frontier travel. It didn't take him long to realize that the Bible was the only thing Jitter knew anything about. The wiry, dark-haired man with a baby face had experienced a vision, calling his family to journey to California.
"Pa, I like it here on the trail better than in Boston. I like Paint. He's such a beautiful pony. I bet he can run all day."
Bruce chose not to discourage Wes's enthusiasm. It lifted his spirits. And dang it, his spirits needed lifting. They were half a day out of Kansas City, with maybe weeks or months of travel before they found a suitable place to homestead. In the back of his mind, Bruce counted on finding a plot of land in Texas, hopefully a homestead along a stream to furnish a good supply of water for a farm. He had always had a little garden in the back of the house in Boston. He felt that qualified him to be a farmer. Instead,
he found himself half wishing he hadn't agreed to travel with Jitter. The block's wagon held the front position because of the oxen. Two teams of oxen could outpull horses, but moved at a ponderous pace that left Bruce exasperated. "Pa, I'm hungry. When are we going to eat lunch? My mouth is watering for one of Ma's biscuits and some bacon she cooked up at breakfast." Bruce pulled out his pocket watch from his vest pocket. "I reckon we can stop if Jitter is obliged to halt for a spell. I'll ride up and ask him." As Bruce pulled alongside their wagon, he called, "Lois, Wes wants to stop for lunch. What do you think?" Becky and Wes got their blonde hair from Bruce's wife. Luckily, neither one had his Irish red hair. Lois drove the wagon while Becky rode on the seat beside her, reading her favorite dime novel, which she must have read 10 times since they left Boston. Becky lowered her book. "Yes, Pa, I'm starved." Lois shrugged. "There's your answer." "I'll tell Jitter we want to stop," Bruce said. "Not that I can tell if his wagon is moving at times," Bruce added as he pressed his heels into the side of his brown gelding. Unlike the two draft horses hitched to their canvas-covered wagon, Bruce rode an older Morgan horse. Bruce didn't know the exact age of his mount, but despite his advanced age, the horse seemed fit. He had gotten the Morgan and the pony cheap from the livery stable. The two draft horses had been pricey, but he figured their strength would come in handy. Bruce nodded at Jitter, who walked beside the leading pair of oxen with one hand on the yoke and an open Bible in the other hand. Jitter glanced up from reading. "Howdy, Jitter," Bruce greeted him. The wiry little man lifted the Bible. "I've got a spare if you feel the need to get closer to the Lord." Bruce had purposely not offended the man by telling him he wasn't a churchgoer. However, Jitter's constant urging for him to read the Bible had begun to dig at Bruce. "Nope, I just rode up to tell you we are stopping for a bit. My children are hungry. Heck, you know how it is. Kids are always hungry." "Sure, Bruce, I'll stop the oxen, but we ain't going to be eating. That is, unless we're going to stay put for a couple of hours. Nettie didn't cook up nothing this morning. We ate in the restaurant beside the hotel. And she is as slow as molasses in January fixing victuals." Bruce had hidden his disappointment at the ineptness of the couple so far. He realized he knew little about pioneering across the plains. However, what Jitter Block and his wife knew wouldn't fill a thimble. Between them, he hadn't seen a lick of cow sense. "Join us for some biscuits and bacon. Lois cooked up plenty this morning." Jitter smiled. "God bless you, brother. I think the Lord must have sent you to help us get to Texas."
"More like the devil sent you to keep me from Texas," Bruce thought, but didn't say.
He just nodded while he turned his gelding around. When Bruce looked back at his wagon, a mounted Kiowa on the trail met his gaze. Bruce closed his eyes, hoping he had only imagined the figure. However, when he opened his eyes, the man still stood in the middle of the trail, staring at the wagons. While his heart raced like a quarter horse in his chest, Bruce kept his horse at a slow walk as he headed back to his wagon.
"You look concerned, Bruce. Is something the matter with the blocks?"
Lois asked when she got a look at her husband's face. Bruce considered telling Lois about the man watching them, but decided not to do so until the wagon stopped.
"Lois, pull up beside the block's wagon before you stop,"
he told her, and knew that his wife would ask him why. She did.
"Why beside them? We got to share food with them. Nettie didn't cook this morning."
Bruce's wife shook her head.
"It wouldn't surprise me if she doesn't even know how to cook. She ain't much older than Becky. I'm not sure hooking up with the blocks was a smart idea, Bruce."
Becky glanced up from her book.
"I know how to cook, Mama."
Lois guided the team of horses to the side of the trail.
"Yeah, but that doesn't mean Nettie does. Maybe her mother didn't teach her."
Bruce didn't hear the rest of their conversation. He walked his horse to the rear of the wagon where Wes twirled a lariat, pretending to rope a cow.
"Pa, I'm going to be a cowboy when we get to Texas and settle on a homestead. I'll rope and brand our cows."
"Yeah, that's fine, son, but first we have to get to Texas. And second, we have to find a good piece of land to stake a claim to." While Bruce spoke, he glanced down the trail. Nothing. The man had disappeared. Wes turned in his saddle.
"What are you looking at, Pa? Did you see a jackrabbit or a coyote? I wonder if I could rope one like it were a cow."
Bruce shook his head. Just looking. Maybe he had imagined it. No, he had seen him, and it meant trouble. "Come on, Wes, up to the front of the wagon. We're going to eat with Jitter and Nettie."
"Pa, their baby cries. It drives me crazy. They have the milk cow. It can't be hungry all the time, can it?"
Bruce shook his head. "Babies cry, Wes. That's a fact of life. You cried so much your ma and I considered renaming you Crybaby. Now get on up front and help your ma unload the victuals when she pulls alongside the oxen."
"Pa, I don't believe I cried as much as you say. I'm fixing to ask Mama. I bet she tells a different story,"
Wes said while he reined his pony over to the left side of the wagon. Bruce didn't register his son's words. His thoughts were on where the Kiowa man had disappeared to. Suddenly, he remembered they had passed a ravine a little ways back, around where he had spotted the mounted man. "Dad, blame it!" Bruce willed the concern from his face as he did during a poker game. He walked his gelding up to where Lois had placed a platter of biscuits and thick slices of bacon on top of a barrel of crackers. He dismounted as Jitter and Nettie walked over. "I appreciate your invitation to break bread with you," Jitter said. "May the Lord bless you."
"Where is the cry, baby?"
Wes asked as he reached for a biscuit. "Son," Jitter said, "we haven't asked for God's blessing yet." An annoyed look flashed across Bruce's face. "Wes already said the blessing," Bruce said as he secretly winked at his son.
"Yup, I'm good at saying the blessing, Mr. Block,"
Wes replied as Lois glanced at her husband and rolled her eyes. Bruce sat so he could see the trail behind the wagons. He waited until everyone had eaten a biscuit and some bacon before he cleared his throat to get everyone's attention.
"I have something to tell you all. Now don't get your bowels in an uproar when I tell you."
Lois gave her husband a hard look.
"Is something wrong?"
"It could be. I saw a mounted Kiowa man watching us back down the trail a ways."
"Kiowa!"
Nettie cried out and promptly fainted against her husband.
"You frightened my wife, sir,"
Jitter called out as he fanned Nettie with one hand while he supported her with the other hand. Bruce sighed and fought to keep his temper.
"It couldn't be avoided, Jitter. I had to tell everyone. I fear there could be more of them hidden in the ravine we passed. I do believe that's where the man I saw disappeared."
Lois pointed her finger at the wagon.
"Becky, get in the wagon this minute. You too, Wes."
Wes glanced at his father.
"Do as your mother said, and hand me out the shotgun," Bruce ordered. He looked over at Jitter. "Get your wife in the wagon, and if you have a gun, fetch it."
"I just got a scatter gun. It's for hunting jackrabbits. Shooting a person goes against God's teaching," Jitter stated as he turned a shade wider. He lifted his wife and hurried to the wagon.
"Bruce, these people are going to be our death,"
Lois surprised Bruce by saying.
"I thought you liked Nettie."
"I did in the general store. Look around. We ain't there anymore, and being kindly don't seem to amount to a hill of beans out here on the trail."
Lois paused.
"What are you looking at?"
She turned to look back down the trail and screamed.
"Wes, give me that shotgun! Now!"
Bruce shouted as he walked over to the side of the wagon. Wes's head popped out from inside the wagon.
"Here, Pa, I loaded it.
Here's the bag of shells,
the boy said, handing the items to his father. Bruce took the shotgun from Wes and then slung the strap of the ammo bag over his shoulder. When he bought the shotgun, like Jitter, he had only thought about hunting rabbits. It had only been the night before they left Kansas City that Bruce had heard tales of Kiowas attacking pilgrims on the Santa Fe Trail, and he had been in such a hurry to load the wagon the next morning he had plumb forgotten to buy a rifle.
"What are you going to do, Bruce?"
Lois asked from behind the wagon seat.
"Whatever it takes to protect us, Lois."
However, the thought of killing another man caused Bruce's stomach to churn. He might not read the Bible regularly like Jitter, or even go to church often, but he'd never been a violent man. Bruce glanced at the block's wagon. He didn't see Jitter or Nettie.
"Jitter, get your shotgun and come out of the wagon."
The man didn't answer him. However, Bruce thought he heard someone praying.
"Dang it, prayer isn't going to help us," he mumbled.
Suddenly, war cries echoed off the wagons. Bruce glanced down the trail and found himself facing a charging war party of yelling, rifle-brandishing Kiowas. Bruce quickly sought cover. The only place that looked even remotely safe was under the wagon. He dove to the ground and crawled under the wagon as rifle bullets kicked up dirt near him. Once under the wagon, Bruce lifted the shotgun and aimed at the man riding ahead of the others. Knowing the range of the shotgun from hunting rabbits, he waited until his target almost reached alongside the wagon before he pulled the trigger. The shotgun kicked his shoulder so hard he yelped in pain. However, the attacker fared worse. The blast from the shotgun knocked the man off his horse. He hit the ground hard and didn't move. A moment later, the Kiowas raced past the two wagons, firing their rifles into the canvas covers of the wagons. Bruce reloaded his single-shot shotgun and turned around to face the Kiowas, who had stopped about 300 yards down the trail. At that moment, the brick mason from Boston realized his family's chances of surviving the attack were slim to none. Chapter 2 Trent and Patrick McLeod. 22-year-old Trent McLeod bent over the side of Tex, his Appaloosa stallion, to study the trampled grass at the entrance of a ravine that cut a deep gash across the rolling hills of the Kansas prairie. Trent's 6'2" frame possessed broad shoulders and narrow hips that women loved and men envied. His copper skin came from his Yawkey mother, while his size, sandy-colored hair and deep blue eyes came from his Scottish trader father. Trent favored a Sharps 50-caliber buffalo rifle. He always carried the big-caliber rifle in the crook of his arm. He packed a Colt Army in his holster and a Bowie knife in a sheath on his cartridge belt.
"What do you see?"
Patrick McLeod, Trent's younger brother, asked from atop the bang-tail stallion he had chased for days before roping the big horse in a box canyon. Pat had inherited his features wholly from their mother. He was short and wiry, with coal-black shoulder-length hair and piercing brown eyes that constantly moved like a dangerously cornered cougar's eyes. Pat was mature, far beyond his 18 years. He had practically been born with a pistol in his hands. He carried a double holster on his cartridge belt. In each rested two lightweight 36-caliber Colt Navy revolvers. When the occasion demanded, Pat would draw the Colts so fast they seemed to appear in his hands by magic. He carried a smaller hunting knife in his sheath with a 7-inch blade and handle wrapped in rawhide. He could throw it 20 feet and hit the bullseye each time. Trent straightened up in the saddle.
"Unshod pony tracks, 20 at least. Kiowas, I reckon.
The ravine leads to the Santa Fe Trail," Pat stated. "Should we mosey on to Independence, Missouri, and look for work, or see what the Kiowas are up to?" Trent lifted his Boss of the Plains hat and ran his fingers through his thick golden hair.
"Well, they sure as blazes ain't headed to California,"
he said in a Texas drawl that had a slight Scottish brogue.
"Reckon you got them pegged," Pat said as his Mustang turned in circles, eager to be on the move.
"Calm down, Leo," Pat added as he rubbed the big horse's shoulder.
"The Kiowas are hunting wagons, I suppose. If it's a big wagon train, there might be work for us," Trent said while he straightened his hat.
His brother Pat shunned hats of any form. He wore the traditional Yaki cloth headband and kept his glossy black hair shoulder length. Pat said he wore his hair in this fashion to honor his mother's people. Pat nodded.
"It would be good to earn wages as we head back to Texas. We could catch a bullet for our efforts from these Kiowa blacklegs," Trent reminded his brother.
Pat chuckled. "When did the threat of gunplay ever stop us, Trent?"
"Never."
"Then we better get a move on before those Kiowas corner some settlers," Pat said as he gave Leo free rein.
The big black-and-white spotted stallion tossed his head while he proceeded to descend into the ravine, etched out of rock by rainwater over eons of time. The two brothers had not spent any time with Yawkeys. They had traveled with their Scottish father, Roger MacLeod, and mother, Juanita, throughout northern Mexico and Texas. They had traveled from one outpost to another as Roger MacLeod sold an assortment of weapons and tools to whoever had hard cash or something worthwhile to trade. However, that didn't mean the brothers hadn't received Yaki training. Their mother had taught them to hunt, track, and ride at an early age. While Roger MacLeod had trained them to shoot and handle various firearms, along with the military tactics he had learned while in the King's Scottish Regiment, and how to read. Trent had taken to the long gun. If he could see it, he could kill it with his Sharps. Although the Sharps was a single-shot rifle, Trent had become so proficient at reloading that he made it appear he was shooting a Winchester lever-action rifle. Not quite as quick on the draw as his younger brother, Trent had proven he could hold his own against gunslingers in a duel. The brothers heard the shots before they reached the rim of the ravine. When they spilled onto the Santa Fe Trail, the 20 Kiowas had already made one pass at the two wagons. The warriors were milling around, getting ready for another charge, when Trent and Pat urged their horses into a gallop. As they raced toward the two wagons, Trent dropped his reins and steadied the Sharps with both hands. He aimed at the man wearing the longest feather head dressing, knowing from experience that he was the war chief. The boom of the buffalo rifle coincided with the war chief toppling off his pony. The startled Kiowas glanced at the two men charging toward the wagon with sudden respect. Instead of attacking, they milled their horses around their fallen leader. Pat's big Mustang reached the wagons first.
"Anyone hurt?"
Bruce peeked out from under the wagon. His eyes were white with fear.
"Anybody hurt?"
Trent asked as he stopped his Appaloosa alongside Pat's Mustang.
I don't know."
Bruce finally found his voice.
"Lois? Becky? Wes?
Are they gone?"
his wife answered.
"Pa,"
Wes said.
"You killed one. I saw him fall."
Bruce crawled out from under the wagon.
"No, they are still here, but we have help."
"I'm scared, Pa,"
Becky said as she stuck her head out the front of the wagon. Trent smiled when he spotted the girl.
"Howdy, miss. Don't worry. My brother and I will take care of them. No need to be scared."
Becky stiffened.
"Well, stranger, I'm not really scared, just concerned for my father's safety."
Pat nodded toward the group of Kiowas.
"Trent, quit eyeballing the pretty girl and put another of the Kiowas in the dirt.
They're getting ready to charge. Shoot the one on the sorrel. I reckon he's the leader now."
"Excuse me, miss, I better do as my brother asks, or you might catch a stray bullet,"
Trent said, as he turned in the saddle, raised the Sharps to his shoulder, and fired without seeming to aim.
"You got him,"
Pat confirmed as the man on the sorrel pitched forward off his horse.
"Of course I did," Trent said.
He turned back and winked at Becky,
I never miss a shot, he added while reloading the rifle.
Hmm, so you say,
Becky responded curtly. Get back in the wagon and hunker down, Bruce ordered. He looked up at Trent. That's some fancy shooting, but will it stop the attack? They have only lost three. Trent nodded.
Yup, if there's one thing a Kiowa fears, it's a buffalo rifle.
Trent glanced over at Pat.
However, should they charge, Pat will blaze away with his Colt Navies. And at pistol range, he doesn't miss.
You boys seem to know a lot about Kiowas, Bruce said, while he intently watched a group of men who seemed stunned Trent had killed another of them from such a distance.
But if you don't mind my saying, he looks like one, Bruce said with a nod toward Pat.
We're brothers. Our mother was a Yawkey and our father Scottish, Trent said.
My name is Trent. And I take after my father while Pat takes after our mother.
Dang, I would have never in a blue moon guessed your brothers, Bruce said, still watching the milling band of Kiowa.
By the way, I'm Bruce Cowan. My wife Lois and my children Becky and Wes are in the wagon.
Pat nodded. Glad to make your acquaintance.
Trent tipped his hat.
Likewise here. He glanced at the Kiowas.
Should I kill another one? He asked no one in particular.
I don't abide by killing unless I'm forced to, Bruce said.
Wait and see if they start to charge.
Trent sighed. It could be dangerous. If they're determined, some will reach the wagon, shooting for all they're worth.
Yeah, but killing them from such a distance seems almost like murder, Bruce said.
You must be from back east, Pat said.
Boston.
Well, Mr. Cowan, Trent started.
Call me Bruce.
Trent nodded.
Bruce, we're less civilized out west. Sometimes it's shoot first to stay alive, and this qualifies as one of those times.
Trent, they're packing the two dead chiefs on their horses, Pat said as his brother raised his rifle to his shoulder.
Trent lowered his rifle to the crook of his arm.
Yup, I see. They will want the one Bruce shot. They'll send a man with a peace lance to fetch him.
Sure enough, after the Kiowa loaded the two dead men onto their horses, one with only one feather in his headdress rode up, waving a lance and leading an extra horse.
Pat responded with sign language. He glanced at Bruce.
I know a few languages, but the Kiowa tongue is too twisted for me. I just told the man to retrieve his fallen warrior with honor.
The three men watched the warrior load the last dead man on the spare horse. After he rode back to the group, the entire party cut a wide circle around the wagons and headed back to the ravine. Bruce lifted his bowler hat and wiped the sweat off his forehead.
To be plumb honest, I thought we all were as good as dead when they attacked.
And dad blame it, if you two youngsters hadn't showed up, the Kiowas would have massacred us.
Lois stuck her head out of the back of the wagon.
Are they gone?
She asked hopefully.
Yep, thanks to Trent and Pat McLeod, Bruce said.
Bruce, I hear the Block's baby crying, but I haven't heard a peep out of Jitter and Nettie,
Lois told her husband as she looked across at the wagon beside theirs.
Jitter, Nettie, the danger's over. You can put down your Bibles and stop praying,
Bruce called out. Only the wailing of the baby answered him.
I'll go over and have a look-see. They might still be too frightened to make a sound.
As he walked around his team of horses, Bruce could hardly believe their good luck that none of the horses, nor the oxen, had been hit during the shooting. When Bruce reached the Block's wagon, he pounded his fist on the side.
Jitter!
He yelled. The baby wailed louder. Growing suddenly concerned, Bruce climbed onto the floorboard of the wagon. He glanced beyond the seat into the back of the covered wagon.
Dang it! Dang it!
He yelled.
What's the matter?
Lois called from the seat of their wagon.
Jitter and Nettie are dead. They both took bullets. Oh, goodness. Let me look at the baby,
Bruce cried out as he climbed into the back of the wagon.
A moment later, he emerged carrying the infant girl wrapped in a blanket.
He glanced over at his wife.
She's fine. Just needs change.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?